Welcome to episode 38 of the SWNZ podcast, the podcast for New Zealand Star Wars fans. My name is Matt.
And my name is Christy.
Just want to start by quickly saying that we hope everyone out there that's listening is staying safe and coping well. We know there are some of you that are facing challenges with regards to having to be tested or actually still be working on the front line despite the lockdown. So, like I say, we hope everyone is coping and staying safe, and hopefully a little bit of Star Wars injected into your day can help distract from the real world that's going on around us. I'll start by talking about Armageddon Expo that took place in Palmerston North on the past weekend, which was, of course, before the lockdown was announced or came into effect. Now, we managed to get to one of the days of this, not both, unfortunately, so we can't speak to all the events of the Sunday, but we did get down on the Saturday and had a really good time. This was the first time that the Armageddon Expo has taken place in Palmerston North, and hopefully it will be the first of many. I think the attendance and the overall atmosphere bodes well for it continuing at that venue in that location.
I almost thought this was almost too popular for the size of the event. I was really impressed with the crowd size that turned up. It felt like a classic Saturday at Auckland Armageddon in terms of the audience size in the aisles, and the panels were very well attended as well.
Yeah, it was a really good venue all up. I mean, it was quite tight in places because of the attendance levels. I think that may have actually surpassed expectations in some ways. If you've been to other Armageddons recently, as we have, that was 2 months ago that we were down in Tauranga, the vendors were quite similar. But if you're a local attending, then those vendors would be new to you and they'd be very worthwhile checking out. There's a great level of costuming attendance. There was nearly a couple of dozen Star Wars costumers, at least, that we saw all up, and we'll have some additional footage of our highlights up on the SWNZ YouTube channel very shortly. But costuming was great to see. And speaking of costuming, the costume parade that we saw on Saturday was also very, very well attended. A large number of costumers, I presume quite a few local costumers, judging by the complexity and size of some of the costumes. So really positive all round to see the success of a new venue and giving, you know, locals access to it. And it's worth travelling. I know a number of people travelled from by plane or by car for quite some distances to get to this. All round, two thumbs up.
Yeah, I had a really great time.
And speaking of Armageddon Expos, in light of recent events, it's worth just talking about the Armageddon Expo that's coming up, or that's scheduled to come up in Auckland on October the 22nd to 25th. Now, there's some uncertainty about how things are going to unfold over the next few weeks in terms of our ability to move around and hold gatherings, but Armageddon Expo organisers have stated that at this time, we've still got enough time up our sleeves to presume that the Auckland Armageddon Expo will take place on those dates, but they have contingency plans in place if we are not able to. So if New Zealand is still under level 2 to 4 restrictions at the planned time of the Auckland event, it will be postponed to a date in November, which will yet to be confirmed. So that's good to know. November does give us additional time for the country to get things settled down a little bit. That's just one more month down the line, and it presumably means that there are spaces at the venue which will allow this to take place within 4 to 6 weeks of the anticipated date, the scheduled date. In the eventuality that Armageddon Expo Auckland is postponed, all ticket holders will be given the option for a refund or to move their tickets to the new dates. Updates can be found on the Armageddon Expo social media as we go along.
Armageddon Expos are obviously a highlight for Star Wars fans and for geeks in general, so I'm glad that the organisers are coming up with contingency plans. Obviously, for any of us that have attended conventions overseas, like Star Wars Celebration, that's not really on the cards for us at this time, so we've still got local events. Obviously, it was really lucky that we got the Palmerston North Expo done before things flared up. So I'm still looking forward to Auckland Armageddon, no matter if it's delayed a little later in the year. It gives us something to look forward to. And of course, we only want to attend these events if it's safe for everyone to do so. So good to know that the organisers have contingency plans for in the future.
Right, one big new thing that cropped up during the past week was the trailer for the Star Wars Visions series that's coming up on Disney Plus on September the 22nd. Now, of course, most of you will remember that this is the series of 9 anime shorts. We don't know the full duration for each of them yet. That will be dumped all in one hit September 22nd. We're very much looking forward to it. We've seen some preview material from this in recent past, and we've got some galleries of that up on the SWNZ website. But in the past week, as well as a trailer, there's also been some cast lists. So there's a few interesting things that have come out of this. The trailer is very action-packed, very intense, very dramatic, and very exciting. I think it's got me personally quite hyped for this series. I know there's going to be quite a lot of differences in the flavour between each of the episodes and styles, but I think that's quite fun, and I'm looking forward to this sort of expansion of the universe in that regard. What we did learn from the trailer is that there are actually two versions of the trailer released. One was English dubbed, and one was in the original Japanese language with subtitles captioned. And on the StarWars.com website, we've actually got two lists of cast members, one for an English dub version and one for the original Japanese language. The Japanese language voice talent all seem to have a strong background in other anime productions, which I'm a little less familiar with, but some of you who are strong anime fans may find that interesting and recognize some of the titles that they're associated with. But the list of celebrities that are doing the English dubbed versions is big. There's some big names in there. Jumping straight out at the top of the list is Temuera Morrison, voicing Boba Fett in one of the episodes. But the list includes Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Bobby Moynihan, George Takei, Alison Brie, Christopher Sean, who is the Japanese-American actor who played Kazuda Ziono in the Resistance animated series. Interesting to see him coming back to a Star Wars production. Simu Liu, Masioka, Kyle Chandler, David Harbour, James Hong, and Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa, who has shown up in Rebels. He played Ulrich Wren in an episode of Rebels. So there's been a few instances there in that list where we're seeing people who have done Star Wars voices before returning to a Star Wars production. Very cool to see.
Yeah, this was quite an action-packed trailer. It got me really amped. I'm loving the different approaches and styles, and it was really neat to see that they're going to give fans of classic anime full Japanese versions, and those of us that are not fluent in Japanese or new to anime, a full English dubbed version as sort of an introduction. And it's really neat to see that they've got quite a cast list for this. It's exciting to see Temuera being involved with Boba Fett as a continuation. I know sometimes, you know, the live action actors don't always get to continue in the voice acting world. Sometimes they get replaced, but it's neat to see that he is getting to continue that role. And some fun additions in here, like Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who had a small cameo role in The Last Jedi, of course. George Takei, very famous from Star Trek. Alison Brie would be known from Community and Glow. And we also have the lead actor from Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings, which is coming up very shortly from Disney. So it's neat to see them sort of staying loyal to people that have worked with them before. James Hong is a prolific actor who's done a lot of voice work and things. He's done things like Kung Fu Panda. He's just done a lot of stuff. So it's fun to see him being involved in this production as well.
So if you haven't checked out that action-packed trailer, make sure you do, and we'll be counting down to those episodes coming out next month. Also check out on SWNZ, we've put up a scene-by-scene gallery because things are moving so fast in there, so you get a little bit more of a feel of the characters and the settings and the animation style, the art style that we can expect to see in September.
As has been noted, these anime episodes are not within the sort of official canon. This is just a chance to sort of really explore and play around within the Star Wars universe with different concepts and styles. So it's going to be really fun to see what sort of happens when you take a little bit of those constraints off and just let people really play around with some really fun ideas. Obviously, there was a lot of Japanese influence in the original Star Wars script and idea. People have often said that Star Wars is basically samurais with magical powers. So I'm really excited to see imagination playing around in the Star Wars universe.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the comics that we're expected to see coming out for the rest of the year. In November, it's been announced that a one-shot comic will be coming out from Marvel called Star Wars Life Day that's centering around the adventures of Han Solo and Chewbacca. That'll be fun to see, and fun to see the reference to Life Day. It's coming out at the end of the year during the holiday season when Life Day is sort of tended to be celebrated in the real world. But one that really caught my attention is just an announcement that a new 5-issue comic series from Marvel will be coming out called Star Wars Crimson Reign. It's set to continue the story about Crimson Dawn that began with the War of the Bounty Hunter series that's going on just at the current point in time. It's set between The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. This is written by Charles Soule, who has been doing a lot of writing for Star Wars just at the moment, and the summary is as follows. While Kira plays a huge part in the War of the Bounty Hunters, that event is really a Boba Fett story. I have a bigger story I'm going to tell with Kira in Crimson Dawn, and it's all connected to the reasons she kicked off things in War of the Bounty Hunters in the first place. You'll learn more about that in the closing pages of War of the Bounty Hunters number 5 out in October, and I think fans have no idea how exciting and new this story will feel. So we talked about Kira's role in that War of the Bounty Hunters series last podcast, because if you find it very personally interesting, she's a great character, and her story was truncated very much so in the conclusion of Solo, a Star Wars story. So it left a lot of questions unanswered and left a lot of fans wanting to see more. So I'm very much looking forward to this 5-issue comic series, or the trade paperback aggregation of them that will come out after that, and seeing where it goes. Because we did, in fact, just in the past week since we last podcasted, happen to watch, before we even knew about this, the movie Solo again. We've just had a bit of an urge to do that, so we've had quite a bit of a strong connection with Kira and her story just in the last little week.
I know, personally, as a fan of her character, I really wanted to know what was in store for Kira after Solo ended. Obviously, she has connections with all sorts of underworld characters, and I really wanted to know more of her story. Obviously, we have a certain amount of closure with Han and Chewbacca. We know where they ended up. We know where their story leads off from the end of that movie. But Kira, oh, there was so much potential there, and I would have loved to have seen a follow-on movie that centered on her. But at least we now get an idea about what she's done after that movie with the comics, and the fact that this is set between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, that means that she is still running around the galaxy all those years later, when Han and Chewbacca are with Luke and Leia.
Well, between ESB and Return of the Jedi, it's an interesting time frame. Han is in Carbonite, of course, so he doesn't actually know what's going on. So having not read the stories, it's going to be really interesting to see how that's all handled. One slight tiny downside to this, all I know a lot of people, including us, were kind of would love to see or have seen a sequel to the Solo movie with the same actors, in particular playing Han Solo and Lando Calrissian showing up again, would have been great. There's a little bit of conversation presuming that having the story wrapped up in comic form probably draws a bit of a hard line under that and makes it a little bit less likely. But as you say there, Christy, it's still good to have the story out there and accessible and have some satisfaction in terms of that conclusion.
Yeah, I always... Obviously, as Star Wars fans, we always want live-action content, or at least sort of Clone Wars-level animation, to continue stories. But I have to keep reminding myself that the comics and the books are a full, legitimate part of the Star Wars storytelling universe, that I shouldn't be sad that the stories continue on in written form, because they are just as good. I do really enjoy the comics and the books, so obviously it would have been fun to see Solo 2 continuation of these stories.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I'm excited that at least this story does continue in other formats.
So that information has actually come from a scoop via IGN.com. It's not come out via StarWars.com or Marvel Comics just yet. So we'll probably get more information. We're expecting that 5-issue comic series to kick off later in the year. So looking forward to it at that point in time. Okay, now at this point we usually talk about product announcements and store reports, but of course with it being level 4, everyone being required to stay at home unless you're in an essential role in the workforce, there isn't a lot to talk about in terms of store reports. Click and collect is in fact not allowed under level 4. NZ Post do stipulate that they are allowed to pick up courier packages, so online sending tools for courier bookings are still available via NZ Post, and this means that TradeMe is still operating. So although we can't talk a lot about in-person brick and mortar store reports, there's still a little bit going on online that legitimately complies with the level 4 lockdown obligations at this point. MyDabe is still able to sell apparel, Lego, tabletop games, and books, but beyond that, there's not a lot to talk about in terms of what people are finding on store shelves in department stores and toy stores, of course. So that will change a little bit over time. There are a couple of things that have cropped up recently. NZ Mint have shown the new Grogu Baby Yoda Christmas holiday coin that will be coming out shortly. I think it's up for order just now, with shipping being a little bit delayed because of the COVID situation, of course. So that's a 1-ounce silver coin from New Zealand Mint. They do Christmas /holiday celebratory coins every year. And it looks like the Star Wars one this year is going to feature Baby Yoda. That 1 ounce silver coin is priced at $162.55, so a shade higher than the standard pricing for 1 ounce silver coins from New Zealand Mint. And something that came a little bit out of the blue, we're not sure about to what extent it's going to be available to or impact on New Zealanders, but it's interesting and worth talking about. A new company that's technically a subsidiary of Rubies, the costuming company, who are also owned by NECA, another costuming and prop replica company called Denuo Novo, is producing high-end, expensive Star Wars replica helmets. That announcement just came out within the previous 24 hours. This is interesting for a couple of reasons, because they are talking about fulfilling orders, back orders that have been taken by Anovos helmets. Now, some of you may be familiar with the Anovos costuming company. They have the Star Wars license and have been listing and selling a number of Star Wars costumes and helmets for quite some time. Some of those helmets and costumes have been being received, and they're very nice quality when you do get them, but they do have, unfortunately, a bit of a reputation for not being able to keep up with orders or pre-orders. This may be a bit of a move where they're in one way or another collaborating with Rubies, who have a very big reputation and very big production line in terms of the volume that they put out. So there may be some sort of collaboration going on in the background to allow them to fulfill back orders. So these tend to be priced quite a bit higher than, for instance, the Hasbro Black Series that we talk about a lot, but they are made from more robust construction materials, and they have good attention to detail. It's going to be interesting to see how that pans out.
Yeah, the history with Anovos is sort of a mixed one. It kind of depends on who you speak to as to what you sort of think of the company. They produce very high quality things. They sort of started out with a lot of very high quality Star Trek stuff, going back and getting the same fabric made, screen matching everything. And so their attention to detail was quite highly regarded. But as time wore on, they would take a lot of pre-orders, and then it would be years before people got the product in question, if at all. And of course, after a while, there was talk of legal action from some disgruntled fans that had paid hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars for product that 3-4 years down the line they had still not received, and trying to get refunds from Anovos is notoriously hard. And at the moment, when you look at the Anovos website, they currently have no Star Wars product for sale. It's all sold out or simply there with a placeholder interest list where you can sort of put your email in to be notified if they ever do a run of this product. So it's sort of been interesting to see. I know at some point they acknowledged that there were lags in their production line, and they said that they would move to a no pre-order model, that they would make product and then sell it. But we haven't really seen them actually do much of that.
As a consequence of that, no.
Yeah, so I was kind of, watching. In the past, we have bought one or two Anovos products in the way back past, but not recently, not for many years. Their Star Wars license seemed to flip-flop between US only and then international and then US only again. So it kind of seemed like things were really sort of not doing so great under the surface. I guess we'll never know if that licensing change was a bit of a slap on the wrist or they were just trying to reduce the volume orders that they got. But it's interesting to see that we have a little bit of another sort of drip feed of information about what's possibly going on with this. If they have gone to another company to fulfill orders, we don't know whether there is actually legal action that is impacting their ability to fulfill orders, or whether this is just trying to do a clean slate without having to refund hundreds or maybe even thousands of customers that have got outstanding orders with the company. So I'm looking forward to hearing more about this. At this point, we don't know whether their products will be available to order for New Zealanders or whether their products will be stocked locally. I know Rubies is stocked locally in New Zealand for the Halloween
that's an
costume.
Point. Rubies is known for Halloween costumes, so lower tier in terms of quality and detail. The website does say international shipping. The only thing that's on the website at the moment is Star Wars helmets, and the website does say international shipping is available without specifically talking about geographically locking out based on licensing.
We know there was a short while where Weta in New Zealand looked like they were going to be stocking Anovis products. And we know that Mighty Ape stocked a number of Anovis helmets. That was often one of the best ways to get an Anovis helmet because you knew that Mighty Ape had the item in hand. There was no lead time, no pre-order system, and obviously international shipping and taxes were not a problem. So it'll be interesting to see whether they're stocked locally. Obviously, because these are high quality replica items, sourcing them from overseas does mean they tend to hit that 1,000 import limit so that you get stung for taxes and duty at the border. So I'm really hoping that we see a progression. But at the very least, if they ship internationally, then this looks like maybe the next step of accessibility for Star Wars fans looking for high-end Star Wars helmet replicas.
Yeah, so that's quite a lot of conversation, partly because we don't know a lot just yet. But let me just re-hit on some of those key points. This new company or this new legal entity called Denoa Novo is owned by Rubies. Now, Rubies is a very, very big company that has a very long established reputation and makes a lot of Halloween-level costumes rather than collectors-level in terms of detail and quality costumes. But they have a strong pipeline and production background. And the upshot of all of that is that we may get to see new high-quality helmets that aren't being made by other manufacturers in terms of characters. And they may be available to New Zealand if Rubies is able to ship internationally or has distributors within New Zealand. Already on their website, they've got likes of the Shore Trooper and the First Order Flame Trooper, which we don't tend to see coming from other vendors like Hasbro and the Black Series line. So there could be some interesting developments in terms of what we might see coming out of this.
I think this, hopefully, is good news for helmet collectors because in the past, there's generally been the main two of EFX and Anovis, and both of them are notorious for taking a very, very long time to produce and ship items. EFX, it notoriously could take years for some of their items. In particular, the Biker Scout was getting a bit of a notorious reputation. They took pre-orders and then they had a lot of trouble getting their actual product made. And obviously Anovis, it could be years. Some products they pumped out very, very quickly, and then others just seemed to sit on their books for years. It was really sort of hit and miss about whether you were going to get your item or you're still waiting for it. So fingers crossed, Rubies is a big, long-standing professional company. It would be really great for Star Wars fans to have a reliable company to go for their collecting needs.
Well, Hasbro's obviously worked out how to do it via their presumably factories in China. I haven't actually checked on that, so don't quote me on that. I presume the product has been made China, but Hasbro has worked out a pipeline to get some pretty high quality helmets into the hands of collectors for a fair price point. These Denuo Novo helmets are at a higher price point, but you know, Hasbro's proven that it's possible, and hopefully we'll see more in terms of variety of, because you know, the Hasbro Black Series, it's pretty much limited to Stormtroopers, variations on Boba Fett helmets and variations on X-Wing helmets, so it'll be fun to see that line, that range expanded upon. All right, last week saw the conclusion of season one of The Bad Batch. Episode 16, Kamino Lost, screened last Friday. And we've got a few things to talk about in terms of what went on there. But so there's things to talk about in terms of detail, plot detail, but there's also things to talk about in terms of how we feel about now entering this gap between finding out more. Because although it wasn't in terms of a huge cliffhanger from the Bad Batch's point of view, there was most definitely a cliffhanger before the final curtain closed on that episode. We also, as a consequence of that being the start of the gap before more Bad Batch episodes, we went back and watched the Bad Batch episodes of The Clone Wars, and it was fun just to reflect on that a little bit. The Bad Batch episodes of Season 7 of The Clone Wars, of course, are the first four episodes. So that's a little over an hour, coming up on an hour and a half's worth of material. It was fun to go back and watch that. And a few things stood out to me just watching that before we get too deep into talking about that Bad Batch episode. It was a good introduction to the characters of The Bad Batch, but of course they have evolved quite a bit since that episode. When I first saw it, it felt that they were a little bit stereotyped, to be honest. They're a little bit predictable. It felt like they had fairly, you know, shallow character development. And when that first came out, I kind of thought, okay, these are just an additional squad of clone troopers who have some fairly stereotyped characteristics. You know, we've got the muscle, we've got the tech, we've got the sniper, and we've got the leader, and they didn't really go beyond the boundaries of those character definitions. And when I first heard the rumors of the Bad Batch coming out, I felt, how are they actually going to make an interesting ongoing story from that? But as soon as the Bad Batch series kicked off became very rapidly engaged with the characters and the character development, and you know, any fears I had of how they'd actually be able to use these characters to create a whole story and a whole ongoing series just dissipated pretty much immediately. So it was interesting to go back, look at the early instances of those characters and see how they've changed over time.
I also thought it was interesting to note that the voice acting work has also subtly changed. Particularly of note, I noticed the most difference with Crosshair. He sounds a little closer to a standard clone like some of the other Bad Batch voices. He's not as distinctive. By the Bad Batch, I felt like they kind of, I guess, knew that he was going to turn, as it were. So they gave him a little bit more of a, I don't want to say sinister sounding voice,
but at least distinctive.
It's very distinctive and very different to the other Bad Batch voices and in the other Clone Trooper voices. So I thought that that was interesting. Maybe they didn't want to sort of tip their hat too much in the original series, so they made him sound a little bit more standard. They didn't want to make him sort of sound...
That Bad Batch, the Clone Wars episodes that involved the Bad Batch, we know that there was animatics in existence for that for quite some time, so those characters were actually created some time ago, and we don't actually know for certain, well, at least I don't know if the information's out there, that they knew that Bad Batch that was created many years ago now would be able to stretch all the way into a full series.
Yeah, because as you say, they felt a little bit stereotyped. I remember thinking it sort of felt like, okay, we've got the geek with the glasses, we've got the dumb sort of bodybuilder jock, you know, sort of, and then we've got the really sort of snide sort of elite sniper.
And the overarching characteristic for the whole team was, sure, they were successful, but secondarily, they just fought with the regular clone troopers. Yeah. That was a little bit one-dimensional.
Yeah, but I feel like now that I've seen this new series, I feel like they probably just didn't get more into the nuances of the characters because we simply didn't have the time.
No.
They were doing a mission. We didn't really have these quiet moments that gave us the deeper insight into their characters. So
they were the means to an end. The real essence of that story was the rescue of Echo and the relationship in some ways between Rex persisting to rescue Echo, which I thought was really cool. I enjoyed seeing that again. So yeah, you're right. We didn't have a lot of time to get that deep.
Yeah. And I liked seeing those early moments with Echo and the Bad Batch and how he sort of bonded with them fairly quickly, even though he wasn't a designated Clone Force 99 sort of creation, that he's obviously fit in with that camaraderie with these sort of outcasts who are different. He's found his niche there because he doesn't really fit in with the regs anymore. But I saw that episode with sort of like fresh eyes, having watched the Bad Batch. It made me appreciate that episode more. Even if it doesn't go very deep into the characters, I did enjoy it more.
Well, it's the same
having
thing.
Watched the Bad Batch now.
We've talked about going back to other episodes, looking at other characters, Cad Bane and so forth, along the way, and as you say, looking at it with a different set of eyes, you know, a little more information about how things pan out can make those backstories even more deeper and meaningful and interesting, and seeing where the writers have made the connections between the two as well. One tiny detail just before we move on to the episode 16 that I really did enjoy was seeing the version one of Echo's first helmet when he was wearing white, that unique white clone trooper armor. He actually had a helmet that is the basis for his black or dark grey Bad Batch helmet. And I quite like, you know, a fan of helmets and helmet designs and armor designs. And it was interesting seeing where his current or modern or most recent version of his helmet and armor came from and originated from. So episode 16 of the Bad Batch was part two of a plot arc. So it opened with things already deep into the action. The wreckage of Topoka City is already beginning to sink into the ocean. Rampart is seen on the bridge of a Star Destroyer that is shooting down and decimating Topoka City. So they actually depart, the Star Destroyers depart after everything sinks into the ocean, while Bad Batch trying to escape the city before it fully submerges. They're trapped in locked rooms with water levels rising. Omega and AZ-3 save Crosshair when they get trapped in a flooding room. The wreckage settles right down on the ocean floor, and they have to make their way to the tube that connects to the platform their ship is docked on, but they find it damaged. AZ suggests that he will in fact guide them to the surface using the medical capsules within the lab, but he runs out of power on the way up. Omega tries to save him at the risk of drowning, and Crosshair saves both of them. When they reach the surface safely and get to the ship, they ultimately part ways. Crosshair does not go with Bad Batch, and that's pretty much the conclusion of the season from Bad Batch's point of view. But there is a final scene where Nala Se is brought to an Imperial facility. A science facility is about all the information we get from that. She's being delivered and welcomed where her reputation is as a cloner is acknowledged. Now, on screen, we don't get a lot more information from that, but it has been revealed that that mountain, the facility embedded within the mountain, is in fact Mount Tantus. This information came out via concept art where the caption is that it declares that this is Mount Tantus. Now, we know a little bit about Mount Tantus in terms of its role in the expanded universe, the old expanded universe, the legacy expanded universe. Mount Tantus was created by the author Timothy Zahn and first appeared in the 1991 novel Heir to the Empire. It's very significant, and it does leave us a lot of room for speculation as to what it means. In the Legends continuity, Mount Tantus was home to Emperor Palpatine's secret storehouses, including thousands of Sparty cloning cylinders, i.e. this is in fact a facility where cloning can take place. Now, back in the Legends continuity, the Sparty cloning cylinders are interesting because they take a different approach to the Kaminoan cloning. Kaminoan cloning can have a single clone grown to maturity over a span of 10 years, which gives them time for training and education. The Sparty cloning cylinders output a fully mature adult human within a staggeringly quick one standard year. So there's a different approach to cloning between these two different technologies, and whether or not that's something that they will bring into the story or not is not clear, and it's not even clear if we'll see them reference Sparty cloning cylinders. But I think the inclusion of Mount Tantus is significant. It's almost certainly going to be related to the Empire's cloning research and cloning program.
Yeah, there's no reason for them to bring something that's already established in the older expanded universe lore unless it had a certain significance. If they just wanted to make it a secret Imperial facility, then they can come up with any new name on any new planet. I think they know that the fans will recognize the significance of this, and that's why it sort of has the sort of ominous closing scenes, because as soon as fans know the significance of that location and why they might take Nala Se there. We also see an Imperial there wearing a uniform very reminiscent of the scientist from The Mandalorian, who is obviously trying to do something with Baby Yoda. We assume cloning at this stage. We don't really fully know exactly what they wanted Baby Yoda for.
Getting material to investigate, to study for their research program, their cloning research program, yeah.
Presumably. So that feels like another nod that they're intending for fans to make the connection. Otherwise, that person would be just be wearing a standard Imperial costume.
Yeah.
The fact that it's got that symbol on the shoulder and the same sort of uniform as the scientist.
Yeah, without a doubt, that's clearly tying those two links, those two programs. I mean, the symbol on the shoulder is also the symbol that the young clone troopers wear when they're being trained in episode 2, Attack of the Clones. The other thing that's really, really notable is that Mount Tantus isn't just an Imperial cloning facility. It's not just a pet project from some governor or high-ranking Imperial. It is, in fact, the Emperor's storehouse, and that potentially leads into the Emperor's use of cloning technology in the sequel trilogy.
Yes, we see glimpses of sort of cloned bodies that resemble Snoke, and obviously Palpatine in his sort of final form in The Rise of Skywalker. So it'll be interesting to see if we're seeing them lay the groundwork for that off in the future. In the old expanded universe, there were many stories involving clones.
Well, and the clone emperor, and the clone in fact, emperor, and yes. Him transferring his essence into clone bodies. So there's a lot of really interesting directions this story could go from this point.
It's really interesting to see them continually pulling threads out of the classic Timothy Zahn books that the new generation of writers and sort of story writers know how much those books resonated with Star Wars fans. So they are pulling what they can. We saw Thrawn come out. We're seeing other little bits and pieces being pulled out. And that's kind of exciting to see them taking what they can and putting it into sort of the new canon storylines. So it'll be interesting to see if there's anything else from the books surrounding Mount Tantus that they're going to pull out. Are we going to see them even actually hint at a clone emperor?
Oh, look, it really just leads us to think that season two is going to be huge. It's not going to just be about the Bad Batch. It's going to be about a lot that's going on in the galaxy. We talked about season one of the Bad Batch being the establishment of the Empire and speculated that season two might be the establishment of the Rebellion, but it's clearly going to be much bigger than that.
I thought it was interesting that in those final scenes, we see a lot of Republic commandos there.
Yep.
I was almost expecting to see the sort of Generation 1 TK stormtroopers that are...
The Macquarie concept ones.
Yes. Yeah. So I thought it was interesting that we still see some clone troopers being in use here. Obviously, in the earlier episodes in the Bad Batch, we saw that the Republic commandos specifically are the ones that are training the new generation of stormtroopers.
So the Empire still seems to have a need for the more experienced, the higher tier clones like the Republic Commandos and so forth, whereas less so for the ground troops. The
rigs.
Yep.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see if or how Crosshair will fit into the Empire after the decimation of Topoka City. He seems fairly in line with the Empire's way of thinking. He says that sort of the destruction of basically the Galactic Republic, the regular clone troopers, Topoka City, he kind of agrees with what the Empire's done to that. And he's like, you know, we're going to have a secure sort of galaxy with the Empire fully in charge. And obviously they're still reeling from the sort of development that he doesn't have his inhibitor chip. And again, we see Omega trying to reach through to him. And there is a moment where she seems to sort of maybe give up on him, but not quite. She's like, I thought it was because of the inhibitor chip, but I was wrong. And she walks away. But in those final moments, she reminds them, just when she's about to leave, she reminds Crosshair that the Bad Batch is his brothers. And I kind of almost expected her to hug him, but I think she knows that maybe he is lost, so she doesn't sort of make that step, but then turns her back and jumps onto the shuttle with the rest of the Bad Batch. Yes.
Look, I mean, the basic plot for this concluding episode was fairly straightforward, apart from the twist and the cliffhanger at the end. The most interesting thing was revelations about Crosshair's thoughts and perspectives on what's going on, in many ways, his refusal to turn. But also one thing that really stood out to me was he acknowledged that he could see what the Empire was doing in terms of rejecting basic clone troopers, you know, taking a pretty firm hand on its reign of the galaxy, and that didn't seem to faze him. He seemed to be fully on board with that perspective and that approach.
There was a moment when we see how loyal Omega is to her friends, and that extends to droids as well, that she risks her life to save AZ when his batteries sort of fail and he starts to sink into the water. She risks her own life to save him. And then just when we think that maybe all is lost, Crosshair comes in and saves them both. When it looks like he's about to draw his gun, he's actually firing sort of a grapple to pull them up to the safety of the surface. And we see the other clone troopers, when he looks around, he notices that the other Bad Batch are all pointing their guns at him, that they don't trust him. And there's a moment where he almost looks like he's almost a little surprised that they don't trust him, but I think he sort of realizes that, yeah, and he throws his gun to Wrecker as basically like, I wasn't trying to shoot here, take my gun. I was only trying to help.
I think there's some real complexity to all those relationships, and I'm glad for it, and I'm glad for the unpredictability. He softens just a little bit when he acknowledges that he has an obligation to Omega, but that's not enough to turn him with. I appreciate that in some ways, that it's that, you know, has that level of complexity.
I mean, it was only a few episodes ago where he was literally trying to obliterate them all with the engine of a wrecked starship, you know, and literally incinerate them into nothing. And here he is working alongside them, albeit to his own benefit, to escape the sunken city. But he didn't need to help Omega.
No, like I say, he felt an obligation because she rescued him.
Yes.
So there's something deeper there, beyond just his personality as a soldier.
Yeah, I think the animators behind the Clone Wars have shown how they can really dive into those real human emotions and complexities, read just with expressions. They don't even sort of really need to use a lot of dialogue to show just how complex the underlying emotions and the situations are. And I think the turmoil of the rise of the Empire is a really interesting time point for Star Wars. You know, we get a glimpse of it in episode 3, but really diving into it from sort of a ground level, from people that are really involved, like not just sort of like residents on planets when the Empire rolls in and said, you know, we're in charge now, but from the clone troopers themselves. And it's just such a complex story, and I can't wait to see where season 2 is going to go. I really hope it's not a massive wait. Because,
you know, if you want to fill the gap, go back and watch the early Clone Wars Bad Batch episodes, and hopefully we've got, well, we know we've got some other content along the way. On that note, don't forget that next week, next Wednesday, is the Disney Gallery behind the scenes of the final episodes of The Mandalorian screening. That should show up around about 7 p.m. New Zealand time, we're expecting, next Wednesday, August 25th, for, we're hoping, at least an hour of behind the scenes of Mandalorian content, and we'll talk about that in the next podcast.
In the past, for some of the animated series, they used to do sort of little YouTube segments where they would sort of talk about details and plots and things like that about some of the episodes. And I really hope, maybe they will give us a little bit of a sort of a behind the scenes for the Bad Batch, talk about some of the characters, the plot points, the details, just to give us something to sort of dive into. And there might be, I always feel like the animators put in more details than perhaps we pick up on, little nods to things that we don't necessarily immediately make the connections on. I would love to see an input from Filoni and his team on the details and the nuances, and maybe some hints as to what we might see in season 2. I hope they give us a trailer at some point in the production timeline, so that we at least get something in a few months, so that we can sort of know where season 2 might get to. But
well, the cliffhanger implies that they know where they're going to take the story to a certain extent. So,
yeah. Yeah. I get the feel with some of the unproduced Clone Wars episodes that they had huge multi-year concepts, that they kind of had big plans, they had ideas, and I would love it if they have a sort of a similar roadmap for the Bad Batch, that they're like, okay, this isn't just like a short, limited series, that they have goals and aspirations to take this for a much longer run and sort of wheedle through all sorts of stories. Because once you've splintered them off from being soldiers, when they're in their own control and deciding what they want to do,
well, that kind of
so many possibilities.
At this point, they're external observers to what's going on with the Empire and ultimately the Rebellion. So that can be a vehicle for a lot of really interesting storytelling.
Yeah. And obviously they're not afraid to pull in things like Hera and Cad Bane. I can only just imagine what sort of fun little sort of cameos and pop-up characters that we could see in season 2. But knowing that full well a lot of this season 2 could be next year, well until next year, I have to keep reminding myself that we've got the Book of Boba Fett coming out later this year, which is really only weeks away if you want to look at it optimistically, but a few months away. So at least we've got that coming up on the horizon. I really can't wait for that. And of course, the next season of The Mandalorian coming in shortly after that. So lots of good Star Wars stuff to be excited about.
Yep. And so Disney Gallery behind the scenes of The Mandalorian next week, August 25th. Visions approximately 4 weeks out. Well, I think probably exactly 4 weeks, September the 22nd after that. And then a little bit of a countdown to Book of Boba Fett to round out the Star Wars content for this year at this point. On that note, though, that's about it for this installment. I guess we're done doing talking. If you have any thoughts on topics we've discussed today, we're definitely keen to hear them. Leave a comment on the YouTube page or on our website page for this podcast. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you taking your time to listen to us share our passion for Star Wars. Stay tuned to our website, swnz.co.nz, for Star Wars news for New Zealanders and another podcast episode next week and every Friday. And don't forget, you can jump on over to either our Facebook group or the SWNZ message boards to discuss all the latest Star Wars news with other Kiwi fans. Thank you for listening, and stay safe.
And may the Force be with you.